All right, take your Bible and turn to Genesis chapter 12. And you might turn to Romans chapter 4, as we kind of work both of those passages together. And then if we make it to the end, you know that can happen, we might not, but if we make it to the end, then we'll end up making a reference to our passage in John, Genesis chapter 12, and we're going to begin in verse number 1. So if you found that, whether that's in your Bible or on your phone or your iPad or your Kindle or you've got it memorized, Genesis 12, beginning in verse number 1. The Lord said to Abram, "Go out from your land, your relatives, and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who treat you with contempt, and all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. You know, when we start into any Christian season, there's always a question. And I mentioned in a post we put on the Snow Hill website and made a comment that we had a class who had some question about the Christian calendar and about the Christian seasons. And so we're going to try to put together a series that you can refer to, because if you're like me, you didn't grow up with any of that. And the idea that all of a sudden someone's doing something with something like that leaves you a little bit of, what does that mean? What's that about? Are you trying to lead us somewhere we don't want to go? And so I thought, well, this morning would provide a great option to talk about how our schedules work toward setting our agenda and our expectations. We know that today is the first Sunday in spring break, and next week is the second Sunday in spring break. We should probably make those church holidays so that we have the Sundays in spring break. So we have 8 Sundays in the season of Lent. We have 8 Sundays in the season of Easter. There are a number of Sundays in the season after Epiphany, and there are 2 Sundays in the season of spring break. So our expectations are always set when we come to church on one of the 2 Sundays in the season of spring break, that our attendance will be affected by the Sundays in spring break, because after all, a break means a break. And some will be traveling on this Sunday in spring break, and some will be coming home the next Sunday. Some will travel somewhere in the middle. Some won't be able to for other reasons. But normally, we set these expectations. We set the bar incredibly low. We didn't figure that we would have to bring in any chairs this morning. We know what that means to be in the season of spring break. So when we talk about the season of a thing in the Christian calendar, we're trying to say that we submit ourselves to a particular calendar, that is, to the way that we have expectations of what's to come. And so we start out on our calendar with New Year's Day on January 1. And then we size up and we look for, what are those other holidays that I can get off work for? Or maybe out of school for? So we're looking for Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We're looking for President's Day. We don't get off for Valentine's Day, so that's really not a big one for us. But then we look at spring break, and we get some time with spring break. We're looking for Easter, but we don't really get off work for Easter, but that's something that kind of everybody's familiar with. And then we look forward to Memorial Day, because everybody likes the day Memorial Day, because most of us get off work for Memorial Day, and so we set our plan, our calendars. Maybe you're already plotting ahead, and you've got your personal calendar, and you're going to take a few days vacation to coincide with the long weekend. And if that one doesn't fit your schedule, you just wait another month and a couple of weeks, and the 4th of July is coming. Now, you don't get to decide that one. That one just lands on whatever day it's on. And so maybe you try to work your schedule out to where you can work the 4th of July and you don't have to take as many days off from work. So instead of taking maybe 5 days during the week, 4th of July will fall during the middle of the week, you'll get to cheat and you'll get 5 days and only have to take four. That's a good deal, isn't it? And if July doesn't work for you and maybe it doesn't work out for you, then you're going to look for Labor Day because everybody's looking for that day to get off from work. That's Labor Day. That's to honor laborers, honor workers. And so we're looking for that. And if that one doesn't work, then we're looking for Halloween. But nobody gets off work for Halloween, but we do for Thanksgiving. And maybe we get the day after, and so we can turn that Thanksgiving into a long weekend. And that Thursday, maybe we can leave on Wednesday, go see family, get home Sunday, go back to work. If that doesn't work, then we're looking for Christmas. So we have our own calendar and the way that we order our lives, and we start looking at what are our days we're going to get off work, what are our days that are holidays, what are the days we're going to have the kids, if they happen to be in school, that we want to plan something with them. But when we talk about the Christian calendar, what we're saying is that calendar's perfectly fine. That one fits great. It's something it's in our culture to do. It's our school scheduled, our schedules, our work to sync with. But when we're talking about the Christian calendar, what we're saying is there's a calendar bigger than that, or there's a story bigger than that, really is what we're saying. We're saying the story of our lives is really governed by the story of God revealing himself to us, first of all, to someone like Abram. And then along the way to Isaac and to Jacob, to the prophets, to the people, and finally and ultimately, he reveals himself to us in Jesus. And the writer of Hebrews tells us that God has been trying to speak to us in a variety of ways over a long period of time through different means, and finally he has decided he's going to speak to us in his Son. So when we look at Jesus, we're saying, here's how God's revealing himself to us. And all the Christian calendar is doing is saying, hey, listen, that story is more important than any other story. And so when we set out a number of years ago, about 6 exactly, to observe that Christian seasons calendar, I got to thinking, we had our first celebration with the Christian calendar back in 1994. Some of you weren't here in 1994, but we started celebrating the season of Advent. Why did we do that? Well, because at the church that I was on staff at with Dr. Rick Davis, my assignment was the children's sermon every week. And I can't get any of these guys to take that for me. But that was my assignment. And that's what I did week in and week out, was to sit down with the children and have children's time. And he clipped something out of one of his preacher magazines. I didn't take any at the time. And it was a season of Advent. And he said, I want to do this, which meant you're going to do this. That was his expectation. And so in 1994, when I came to Snow Hill, we're going to do the season of Advent with the children. And so we did the season of Advent with the children since 1994. It's a season of expectation. It prolongs, elongates this understanding what God's doing in Jesus. It doesn't just give us a one-day shot at Christmas to try to get it all together. It's saying, let's build up, lead up, let's kind of get our idea of how can we also anticipate and how can we expect God to do great things in Jesus, because that's what we believe he did. Yes? Well, about 4 of you believe God did something really big in Jesus. We weren't in this building. We were in the old building, So we've been in this building in July of 2004. So we're coming up on 13 years. So somewhere on 14, 15 years ago, we observed our first Ash Wednesday service on a Sunday night. Filled the old auditorium. There wasn't a seat available. Maybe as curiosity. But what we were pointing out was that we get away with Easter with one day. And so what would it mean if we took 8 weeks to start thinking about all that went into Resurrection Day? Because after all, for that time period, we're caught up in whatever our school schedule is, whatever our church, whatever our school schedule, whatever our work schedule, whatever our personal schedule is, we set our own calendar and own agenda. And what would be the possibility if we said, hey, let's spend some time and know that if Easter is the big deal, if Easter represents the turning point where God vindicated Jesus, his life and his death by raising him from the dead, which what Paul says in Romans chapter 1, maybe we should spend a little bit more time with the season of Easter by building up to it. And so the season of Lent, we started that, and we were looking for Lent brushes because not any of us really knew what that season was all about. It's not spelled N-I-L-I-N-T. It's L-E-N-T. And the whole idea was, is if Jesus in Philippians chapter 2 thought equality with God was not something to be grasped, but emptied himself, that is, he let go, he gave up, how about and what would it look like if we decided to give up something that we do every day of the week? So Jesus was God every day of the week, but he gave up his equality with God. He gave it up in order to take on human flesh and blood. I'd say that's a pretty big move. I'm pretty sure and determined that if you had the opportunity to be God, you wouldn't give it up to be human again. Yeah? So it's a pretty big deal. So what we do is in that season, we start thinking, well, listen, I have a cup of coffee every day. And I don't know what life would be like without a cup of coffee. I don't have to have it. It's not a requirement. It's not a sin. We don't believe caffeine is wrong unless you get too much of it and you're too wound up with it. Yeah? And so when I go to get that cup in the morning before I go to work, and I've said, no, I'm not going to do it, immediately I'm triggering, why did I give up that cup of coffee? Because, boy, my body's telling me I need that cup of coffee. You say, well, you're giving up that cup of coffee, so for at least a moment out of this day, you're going to reflect on what Jesus gave up for you. So we're not giving up stuff that we shouldn't give up. We're giving up things that we do every single day in hopes that you and I would remember what Jesus gave up and in that process form us to be like Jesus. That is a vehicle. It's a means. It's not a legalistic thing. No one around here is making anybody sign up to do that sort of thing. It's that we don't have practices handy. Our tradition, the free church, low church tradition, we scorn all of those types of habits that have been written large into the history of the church because we think they're hocus pocus. And they're really not. They're actually practices that are intended and designed to help form us and shape us into the image of Jesus. But if you have others that you prefer, that's great. Nobody's saying that you are required if you attend Snow Hill Baptist Church. It's just we know that we're hard people. Okay, I'm a hard person. So forming me takes a little work. And it may be that forming you takes a little work. Is it possible? So if we have something we do that regularly forms us, then there is always the possibility at work that the Spirit of God is forming us so that by the time we get through that process, however long it takes, maybe we appear a bit different. Maybe we take on the traits that Nathan read from Galatians 5. And maybe someone sees us a little bit kinder, gentler, more meek, more peaceful, more faithful. Maybe we have more self-control. That in the process of living our lives in that particular scope and way, it takes on the shape that now, oh, that person's different. And difference takes work. If you're the same person that you were, the same kind of person you were the day you trusted Jesus, asked him into your heart, said you're going to follow him, you declared him to be Jesus' Lord, whatever phrase you use to describe your commitment to Christ, and you're still the same today, you have had no means of formation. So if you're still prone to fits of anger, if you still lie, if you still decide to that you're not going to reconcile with those you're at odds with, if you're still that kind of person today that you were the day you said you're committing yourself to Jesus, then you've had no means of formation. You notice I'm stopping way short of saying that you didn't know what you were doing. Because if you're like me, there are things that I'm harder. I need help with formation. And so doing those sorts of things molds and shapes us because our minds are now set on the things of God, which is what Paul said changes us in Colossians chapter 3. If we set our minds on things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God, if we think about those things and naturally we start thinking about those kinds of things, well, I tell you what, we'll start thinking about the world and our life in it a little bit differently. Formation is important. And so that's one of the things that we do, and we're going to do that, and we'll pick up some more of that, and we'll explain some more of that. But you need to know that we all come to our experience of life with certain expectations. Expectations that I am who I am, I'm who I'm going to be, and you can't change me, can't make any difference of me. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your spouse, and I'm sorry for your kids. I'm sorry for your neighborhood. I'm sorry for the state you live in. I'm sorry for the world that you happen to into. Because the world needs people who recognize that the expectations we set for life are the ones that were given to us, that everyone else practices, and everything will always stay the same if we accept everyone else's expectations and everyone else's practices. The world will just be the same sort of place. And we wonder, why is the world not a different place? Well, because maybe we weren't like Abram. Because I want you to know, I think Abram as a Chaldean in that Fertile Crescent in the Mesopotamian valley, that area there where his family came from, he set out in chapter 11 with his dad and his family, and they start moving. And they start moving from the place where they did business, where their family was. And somewhere in that journey, somewhere they're moving, we get this interruption where the story takes on a different shape, where Abram's expectations are challenged. Go, leave your family. Leave your home. Whatever expectations you've had about the way your life's going to be, the way the world's going to work, you're going to need to let go of them. That's awful lentish. Let go of them. Because I'm going to take away the certainty of you living where you were among the people that you know, doing the things you know. And I want you to follow me. Now, I know that we talked about this before. I don't know how many times we've used this particular passage in a sermon after 20-some-odd years. We've probably been here at least once before. But what I can say to you, it's always worth saying, Abram didn't get a map. God didn't say, I'm taking you over here to this piece of property. You know, you're going to make this big U. You're going to go from Ur way over here and you're going to make this big U, and eventually you're going to drop down into this piece of ground that eventually we're going to call Israel. He just said, I want you to let go of your expectations, and I want you to follow me. Now, can I just ask, is that foreshadowing Jesus' call in any way? Have you thought about that? Isn't that Jesus' same call to anyone who would follow Him? What are your expectations of life? What are your certainties that you want to hold on to? What are the places that you want to make sure you plant yourself? And then He says to you, hey, if you want to come after me, if you want to follow me, you must deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Sounds an awful lot like what God has always been wanting people to do in Jesus. He started telling Abram he wanted done. Yes? You with me? So this isn't something that is new. It just now takes on a grander immediacy. We get a greater picture of it with Jesus. But this is the same thing God said to Abram. I want you to leave here. I want you to go where I'm going to show you. I'm not telling you. I'm going to show you. And Abram believed God. He got up and he left. And that's precisely how Paul interprets it in Romans chapter 4. He interprets this series of events along with Genesis chapter 15, verse number 6. And he says, This is exactly what's going on. That what really happens is when God shows us what He wants us to do, the call is to believe. The call isn't to subscribe to a particular set of beliefs. It's to believe, and that believing takes on a particular action. So how do we know that Abram believed God? Anybody in the room? How do we know? Don't cheat and look at verse 15, chapter 6. From chapter 12, these first four verses, how do we know that Abram believed God? He obeyed. It says, he went. You with me? He went. How is anyone ever going to know you're following Jesus? Yes, you go. Yes, you go. So before we start working out all the things that we're going to say about God as we describe God and we describe, like the songwriter did, that He doesn't sleep, that He's a protector, before we get to those places where we start ironing out all the things we can say about God that we say we find in Scripture, we find revealed in Jesus, before we get there, when we hear God say, go, the way we demonstrate belief is we go. We follow. Belief is not something that is a work. Paul makes that plain in Romans 4. He said, believe is a response to the call of God. And that's what we hope we offer week in and week out, a call from the Scriptures, which is a call from God, is mediated by the Scriptures, by the Holy Spirit. That's a fancy way of saying, we're listening for God to say, here's where I want you to go, what I want you to do, and the evidence is in what we do, not what we say. Jesus actually told a parable about that. Who did the will of the Father? Was it the one who said he was going and didn't, or the one who said he wasn't and did? So when we talk about letting go of something for Lent, we're serious about the things required or we're called to let go in face of possibly hearing God. And if we're not willing to let go of our expectations and our certainties, we're probably not going to hear from God very often. Or we are not going to listen very often. Abram went. We have to also let go of our ideas that Abram did all this for himself. Look at the how many times you see I in those four verses? I'm giving you a hint. Five times. I will. I will. I will, I will, I will. The one doing all the acting, the one doing all the work, who? Who? God. I will, I will, I will. See, this is a story about God. It's a story about Abram. Don't make any mistake, but what we're learning of the story of Abram, we're learning about God. God has a great design, and He's looking for people willing to leave their expectations and their certainties in their location to follow Him to a place He's going to show them. And here's what He's going to do. God's going to take care of everything Abram needs. There's not a worry. Abram gets up and he goes. I have to tell you that when God said to us, trying to figure out where to go after college, Texas wasn't really somewhere we wanted to go. But it became apparent. We certainly didn't want to go to Memphis. We drove out there, and the only thing I think it's got going is Beale Street. It's a joke if you know anything about Memphis and Elvis and, you know, okay, right? Well, go look it up. You'll catch up and laugh. Listen again and you'll laugh the next time. How's that, right? But there were places we didn't want to go. But in order to be faithful to what we believed God wanted, there was a requirement to go. Some of you are in this area because you believe there was a job waiting for you, or there was a promise of a job, or you came here for that reason. A year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 40 years ago. And you probably weighed it all out. Well, let's see, should I or shouldn't I? You did the old diagram. Oh, the pros and cons, where are the overlap? What are we going to do? And you decided, okay, this is where we're going to go. This is where we're going to land. I love the fact that it says Abram went. And Abram went because he knew what God would do. You know, it's so preacher-esque or preacher-ese to say, listen, God's not going to send you somewhere where he's not going to take care of you. And that sure seems to be what he's telling Abram. God's not going to send you somewhere and I'm going to ask you to go somewhere he's not willing to take care of you. I hope you at least give it a try. If you sense God wanting you to do something, you at least give it a shot and say, okay. So as you're praying about serving our children in Sunday school and you're petrified, and you're scared to death, what am I going to do with all those children? What about their expectations, the expectations of their parents? And you're weighing it out, the pros and the cons. You may be invited to leave the confident certainty of your surroundings, maybe your Sunday school class or your comfy chair at home on Sunday morning. And maybe God is saying, hey, I'm going to take care of all your concerns. I'm going to take care of what you need. Well, give it a shot. I bet he will. I know that you think that that's not really a big issue and there are far other greater decisions you have to make, but I'm going to tell you, I don't know too many. Spending time and investing in children, I don't know too many more important opportunities, possibilities, and responsibilities. I don't know too many more at all, anywhere. Except maybe taking care of the fellow who was asleep out here before when Brad got here this morning, who was sleeping by our doors. Maybe that would be one like that. But we don't put those out there so that because they're not important, we put those out there for you because they are important. And then the last thing, because you're looking for three, because that's what preachers do. You know, three is that important number. Verse three, that we've got to be ready to let go of our expectations, our certainties, our surroundings. We got to be prepared to know that with confidence God's going to take care of us. He gives us five I wills. And then if you look at what he says, finally, all the peoples on earth are going to be blessed. You got to remember, this is not for you. This is not for you. And do you see why that the story of God is so disruptive? Because most of the time, the only concern we have is how it affects me. What is it about me? What do I like? What do I not like? What do I want to do? It's all about me. But if there's one thing that Abram learned was all of this activity, leaving where he was from, his expectation and his family, trusting that God was going to provide what he needed, wasn't for him. You see it there? Through you, all people are going to be blessed. Now let me break out people for you for just a second. You may have a footnote in your Bible, and it may say, or clans. Okay? It may say clans. Or it could say tribes. And you see, sometimes the reason we use some words on Sunday mornings are because there are some that are familiar. I don't really know how many of you say, well, me and my clan are getting together. You need to do that? You're having a family reunion. You send out this clan invitation, right? Mm-hmm. Or you find postcards that's got your tribal marker on it, and you send that out because you're calling your tribe together, right? That's what you do, isn't it? No, you call the family, right? Use the word family. You're getting your family together, right? So it's possible here, if we're going to kind of make some good translation, we're saying all the families on the planet are going to be blessed through you. But the problem with families is we don't kind of function tribally like that anymore. Oh, well, we do in some ways. But right here, the whole idea of clan was, as you were talking about a group of people, that was their identity. Abram had a clan. His dad was Terah. They had a clan. They lived over here. He's going to show up eventually in this land of Israel. There are going to be other people here. There are going to be other clans. There are other tribes. And if there's one thing that is pretty clear is we have the hardest time getting away from our tribes. We have the hardest time getting away from our tribes. I don't know if he remembers, but in 1995, I actually cooked on a grill in Schrock Park with Steve Williams. We were cooking for the class. Our kids were in class together. We cooked all those years ago. Steve's been here his whole life, right? Me, not so much. And sometimes even where we live here, there's this push and pull between those who've lived here a long time. Now, by the way, this isn't about me and Steve, okay? We get along great. We're friends. This isn't some kind of pulpit kind of opportunity to slam Steve, okay? But what happens is there's this tension that exists. People who are here and people who aren't from here. Anybody ever feel that anywhere? Not here, but anywhere, wherever you've been, right? You feel that tug. I'm not from or I am from. And it's so easy to gravitate to the people that you're always familiar with, where you're from, right? Yeah. So do you know how hard of an idea it would be for someone who is in an environment where clans and tribes are the dominant identifier to leave his clan and his tribe and then to know that he is going to be the medium through whom all clans and tribes are going to be blessed? That's unthinkable. And most of the time, we don't even want it. So when Abram hears, through you, all the people on the planet are going to be blessed, God is saying, and all this I'm doing for you is not for you. I so wish Christian folks could capture that. All that God has done for you and for me is not for us. Oh, certainly we reap the benefit and the reward. We love to know that God has saved us in Jesus. We've given our lives to Him, and we long to know that, but it's not for us. If Abram's story tells us anything, the activity of God in your life and in my life is for others. That's the hardest thing for us to get our minds around, because our focus is always on me. And maybe the biggest thing to let go of in Lent or any time is me. Because if the world is going to be any different, there are going to have to be a whole new group of people who have different expectations. Different possibilities and different promises at work in the world to say, man, we really want all people, all to be blessed. And that has root, as we finish up, in John 3. And that was our gospel reading for today. And immediately anybody says, John 3, what do you think of? 16. That whole chapter is so reduced to one verse that sometimes, frankly, we cheat it. There's so much more going on in that third chapter than 16. In fact, without what else is going on in chapter 3, 16 makes no sense. If we don't make a connection with what John's doing in the light coming and exposing the darkness, we can't make sense of Nicodemus going to Jesus by night. There's the darkness going to the light. Oh, play with that one for a while. How fantastic is that notion? But here we've got someone who's spending his time in the dark, who has his own expectations. He only thinks there are certain possibilities. He's not really, he's trying to test whether he's willing to let them go. Is Jesus really the one? He's really struggling internally with all of that. And then he finds out that he's maybe not as acute at teaching. He's not as aware of the activity of the Spirit of God. He doesn't realize it's like the wind. He doesn't know where it comes from, but it's always at work. You see, there's loads and loads in 3 before you get to 16. But what we do get in John 3 is that what Jesus did, he did for everyone who would believe. The everyone bit. So when we want to talk about what God's doing, he's not doing it for me. He's doing it for everyone. Everyone who will believe. That challenges our clans, our tribes, and our families. It challenges the notion that Jesus is exclusively all about me. And aren't you glad that it is wired into the DNA of God's plan all the way back in Genesis 12? Because if you're not, by the way, understand something. That as Gentile human beings, you would be excluded. So had there not been a plan for everyone beyond tribes and clans, sorry, you would be uninvited. So let's not make the mistake of living in such a way that people feel uninvited to Jesus by thinking that all this is about me. Let's be ready to give up our expectations, our certainties, and what possibilities we think are only available. And let's say, okay, God, I'm going. Because the last line, chapter 4, book of Romans, I think it's verse 17. Because God is able to make things that don't exist to exist. Now, that's my quick translation without going back and reading it, but it's the story of Abram and Sarah. Abram believed despite knowing that it was really an impossibility, but he believed anyway. Are you willing to believe that way? Anyway? For everyone?